direct costs. Now, we do know how many, and we'll keep using seafood processors. We know how many seafood processors we have in the state. We know the different classifications. And in our regulations, we have a fixed fee associated with those facilities, depending on the type of permit that they have. But it isn't really based on an actual cost. It's based on an average cost, the average cost of the employee, the average amount of time for the different type of facility. And that's the distinction I'm trying to make here. If your actual direct costs are in fact hourly fees, a fixed fee can only be based on averages, because otherwise you have an hourly fee. If you know it takes you 4 hours to do a certain kind of seafood facility, on the average, it takes us that long to do a land-based plant that processes under 5,000 pounds. It takes us an average amount, average of 4 hours to inspect it. We know we plan to do 3 inspections a year, so we have 12 hours worth of inspection, and we know that on the average it takes us an hour to issue that permit. And so we have 13 hours worth of time that we spend on the average on those types of plant every year. And we know that our average hourly cost for seafood inspection, our seafood inspection staff and the 2 staff who issue permits, is $71.74 an hour. So I can take $71.74 an hour and multiply it by 13, and that's what we come up with as the fixed fee for those types of facilities. But that really isn't an actual direct cost, because sometimes the inspection might go real quick. Sometimes we might find a problem and it will take a lot longer. Sometimes the person walking in the door costs us more than $71.74 an hour, and sometimes they cost us less, depending on who they are. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the question is just, you can do it either way. Right? You can do fixed fee or hourly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, not if this bill passes. This bill pro.
No, I don't mean. I just mean in general, without relation to the. I mean, you're arguing for one way, but you could do it either way, because the bill is directing toward actual.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, the bill says we have to have fixed fees.
Right.
Fixed fees and actual direct costs, in my opinion, are mutually exclusive.
Okay. Okay, I think I got my question answered anyway.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concerns run in the same direction, Mr. Davis. And I felt that for the person that wants to have the state to evaluate their plan and so on, they must have some reasonable estimate of what it's going to cost. And when you say, well, we're going to charge you so much by the hour, okay, but how many hours? And then, oh, well, you know, we had a delay, and we had another this, and we had another that. I'd rather put the challenge on the department that, you know, as Mr. Davis says, that we normally do these jobs in 15 hours, 20 hours, or whatever it is. And if for some reason your person on the job is there for 2 weeks later and still looking at a twig, and I'd rather have the permittee seeking your consultation know up front what to expect. Is it a 15-hour job? The average cost is blank.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, our fees are all laid out in the regs. It is right there. If you have that type of seafood plant, you're going to pay $400 a year for your permit, whether it takes us 2 weeks to do your inspection or it takes us 2 hours.
Then why do you want an hourly wage specifically here?
Mr. Chairman, I don't. I don't want them here. All I'm saying is that the language in this bill, actual direct costs, the bill says we can't have hourly fees. The bill says we must have fixed fees, and then it goes on to say that we can only charge the actual direct costs. I'm saying those two things are mutually exclusive. If we've got fixed fees, they are not actual direct costs. They are based on actual costs. They are based on that. There's no question. But what you end up with is an average cost, not an actual direct cost. I don't I am not sitting here advocating for hourly fees. I'm just saying I think that the language in the bill does not follow with the intent of the sponsor of the amendments.
Mr. Tibble.
Mike.
If I could add, we continued to define what actual direct costs are. If you look on line 10, it says the number of hours. I mean, I understand how can you have a fixed fee if you have 4 hours here, 5 hours here, different cases. But we're saying that are usually required to perform the service. Mm-hmm. So what is the service that's being provided? And what are the number of hours that are usually required? That's what the definition of actual direct costs are.
Mr. Chairman, the problem comes with the actual hourly wage rate of the department employee directly engaged in providing the service. Every one of them walking through your door costs me something different. So to base it on the average amount of time they spend, that works, but the same principle needs to apply to their wage.
Representative Davies.
Mr. Chair, we're actually debating an amendment that's coming up. But having said that, I'll continue. I was just going to make the same point that Janice made, which is that if you're comfortable saying the number of hours usually required to perform, why are you not comfortable saying average hourly rate? I mean, that's exactly the same point and issue. And it clarifies that we're not trying to count this fee, the precise person that's in there at that time, but the average of what it costs to do that. And that's the same thing that's being referred to down here in line 10, which is the number of hours usually required. That's an average.
And which amendment would we be talking about?
That would be 10. When we get to it, we would be talking about amendment number 10.
So can we have a wrap-up on amendment number 8?
Right. Amendment number 8, as amended now, really goes to just separating out the municipal things from the industrial things. And that's all that's left in it. And it for the municipal things, it allows the department to set fees, again, not including travel, that covers permit preparation, administration, plan review, and approval, and other services relating to those specific things. Okay.
Okay. So, could you go over one more time the separation between the municipal?
Okay. So the municipal is agriculture, these things that are detailed here on page 1, agriculture and animals, food, drugs, and cosmetics, public accommodations and facilities, certificates and inspections for motor vehicles, the IA program, domestic sewerage systems, water and wastewater operator training, certification of laboratories conducting environmental analyses of public drinking water systems or oil and hazardous substances, or conducting other analyses required by the department.
So you have separated out those things that a municipality may be interested in taking over.
Right. And then the on page 2 now, under F, the 1, 2, and 3 are the industrial things. And in that case, we've gone with the language that was originally in the bill, which gets rid of, for example, other services.
I'm going to maintain my objection. So if there are any other questions, take a vote then.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes.
Representative Kelly.
No.
Representative Coring.
No.
Representative Martin.
No.
Representative Moses.
Yes.
Representative Mulder.
No.
Representative Davies.
Yes.
Representative Davis.
No.
Representative Terrio.
No.
3 yea, 6 nay.
Amendment number 9, I believe, we have dealt with, so we'll make sure that when 3 comes back that the language conforms. So, Representative Davies, would you like to withdraw?
Yeah, I'll withdraw. Offer. Commend it to your attention.
Okay.
Chair, could you give me a brief at ease?
Okay. We'll take just a brief at ease. If the committee would come back to order, we are now on amendment number 10. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess we're going to hold amendment number 10, but just for the information of the committee, the second half of it, line 7 and beyond, is no longer required because we've already dealt with that issue.
Okay.
So we'll hold just the lines 1 through 6 as, yes, as number 10.
And for the committee members, because we are making a number of changes today, this will impact the general fund shift from program receipts to general fund. It was not my intention, I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this at the beginning of the meeting, to move the bill today. I did want to get through as many of these amendments as possible. So Representative Davies is holding number 10. That brings us to 11.
Mr. Chair, basically I've already moved this one, so I'll withdraw it.
Okay. Number 11 is withdrawn. And number 12?
And 12, I'll withdraw, but if I might have just 1 minute, Mr. Chair. What I was looking at here was proposing a new piece that would have OMB set a standard administration-wide overhead cost. And I just note that in that context, there are a number of agencies out there already, insurance and DNR, that have internally established overhead rates, where they do include things like benefits and indirect costs as part of their calculation. So I just wanted to have that on the record that there are in the statutes other agencies that include both things like benefits and indirect costs as part of an overhead calculation. It might make sense in sometime in the future to deal with this as an administration-wide standard practice. That's what this amendment would have done, but I'm not going to offer it right now.
Number 12 would be withdrawn. Yeah, that, I think, brings us to the close of work on 144. Today we will have our legal incorporate all of the amendments that have been passed into a CS. I'll get that distributed to the members as soon as we get it back. We'll also be working with the department on the new fiscal note. Some of the amendments that we did adopt today will change part of their expected fiscal impact. And with that, I'd like to turn now to House Bill 390. And Representative Kelly.
Wait till it's cleared out.
Okay, we have House Bill 390 back from drafters. We have a CS. It's the T version, which incorporates the language. Representative Kelly, if you want to
just to the change. Mr. Chairman, looking for my copy that I had a couple of notes on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was some concern from Representative Krusendorf, and there was a problem last time we met concerning some of the exceptions for a charter marriage before one could receive a fault or a no-fault divorce under certain circumstances, and we wanted to get new draft language to incorporate that. This bill has incorporated it, and as well as the explanation for the court rule changes. Before I go to the court rule changes, there was one thing in the draft that didn't come back that I think could be offered as an exceptional amendment. And if with your indulgence, Mr. Chair,
if you would direct us to that.
Yes, it would be on page 4, section 7, subparagraph B. One of the things that wasn't added in drafting when this came back, and I was surprised, I don't know if it was a drafting mistake or a communications mistake, that under the exceptions there, the other spouse has committed adultery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, down to 7, where the spouses have been living separately and apart. I would like to add one there. It was supposed to be there. I've always wanted it to be there, and that is convicted of a crime that would be punishable as a crime against a person. We spoke of that the last time. It didn't show up, and I think as a conceptual amendment we could add that.
Okay, Representative Kelly, can you, on what specific line then it would be Is that in B7?
About number...
Or you're adding a complete new...
That's in addition to number 5, the felony?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, as I said, the other spouse has been convicted of a felony and has been sentenced to a death or a term of incarceration of 3 years or more. That goes more to the time frame that someone is out of the relationship. And I wanted to cover that. I didn't want someone to feel that they had to go through this long and involved process if they had a spouse that was simply out of the picture for 3 or more years. But it is possible they could be convicted of that and not be a crime against a person. The act of committing a crime against a person is something I want to add to this. And they don't even have to be convicted of that specifically. It could be pled down, but for the act to be punishable as if it were a crime against a person. So the number 5 goes to the length of time. Crime against a person goes to the act. I don't want necessarily someone to have to be in a relationship with someone who has committed a crime against a person.
Representative Davies.
So, person's in a bar, gets into a fight, gets charged with assault and battery. That would be grounds for divorce.
That would be grounds for divorce. If it were beyond fourth degree assault. Fourth degree assault would be a much lower level. That's a misdemeanor. It is not considered a crime against a person unless there are deadly weapons involved and those kinds of things.
So where are you proposing the line be drawn?
The
line be drawn then as the crime against a person. Just a barroom brawl?
No. That would count if it was beyond a fourth degree assault. That wouldn't be a fourth degree assault is not a crime against a person.
Okay.
But more egregious forms of assault are crimes against a person, and that's fine with me. Usually indicated by the use of a deadly weapon, intent to kill, those kinds of things, or intent to cause serious bodily harm.
Okay, so do you want to move that as just a conceptual, or?
Yes.
Do you have the, I guess, I don't know exactly, what reference would we make as far as?
The reference would be the other spouse has committed a crime that would be punishable as a crime against a person. And I think in page 7B is the actual language that you have.
Okay, so we'd be adding to that list there.
Yeah. It's 7B, it's been convicted of a felony under AS 1141 or convicted of an offense under a law in another jurisdictions with elements substantially similar to a felony under AS 1141, and those are the crimes against the person.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, that's similar to number 5 that's already here, right?
I'm sorry. I think I understand the difference between the length of time and this.
It is similar, but it is different. Maybe I'm not explaining myself properly on this. One of them, number 5, just says, guy's going to be away for 3 years, that's grounds for divorce. The other one is, a person has committed this kind of crime, that's grounds for divorce. No matter how many times no matter how much time he or she is sent away for, the act of committing the crime is grounds for divorce because we don't want them in that relationship.
Now, do you want it committed and convicted of?
Convicted of, yes. Or an act that would be a crime against a person.
Okay.
And I don't know the exact statutory references for that, but we have several references for it.
Well, why do you need the conditional language in there if you're requiring them to be convicted?
Because they could plead it down. If you were,
well, then they weren't.
They could. Not plead down, but they could suspend the sentence. I'm sorry.
Pete, would I'd feel more comfortable if I could see it drafted up. Would you mind just holding it?
It's, I think, well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's a pretty simple, the questions are going beyond the intent. A crime against a person is a well-defined thing. I don't have that in front of me. But a crime against a person is a pretty well-defined thing. We have it, we've seen it probably four times in this committee this year. We know what it is. And so I would like to just move a crime against a person. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that requires too much paperwork involved for a conceptual amendment. If we disagree with adding crime against the person, I don't mind that. We can debate that.
Okay. But I don't understand if we've been convicted of it, or you know, the discussion that we've had so far has left confusion in my mind of whether you've just been accused of it, convicted of it.
Convicted of it.
Convicted.
So you've been. So then I might renew my question. Then why do you need the conditional language that would have been charged as if?
I guess under adult, you know, I'm stuck in juvenile language,
right?
Because I spent so much time doing juvenile work. With an adult, you probably wouldn't. You wouldn't.
So you don't
need, in adult court, you would not need the conditional language. You're right.
Okay, well, why don't you restate your intent one more time?
Would be convicted for an act that is a crime against a person. Under, and there will be a statutory reference to that.
Does everybody understand the conceptual?
The other spouse has been convicted of a crime against a person.
Convicted.
And there would be a statutory reference to those crimes. Are there questions regarding the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none, we'll make that amendment to the CS.
Some juvenile crime business.
I had the question on a related but different matter.
Okay.
Can I proceed with it?
Yeah.
On number five, again, we're. It's apparent from the discussion today that the key thing here is the 3 years. Is that right? On page four, number five?
Right.
So when I asked the question last time about whether suspended sentences made any difference, you said no, but I would think that it must be
on
number five. So it seems like it should read perhaps a net term of incarceration for 3 years or more or something. I don't know if that's the right term, but...
Are we mixing up the crime against person with this one?
No, just a different issue now. Here's the question on number five. Suppose that you've been convicted of a felony and you were sentenced to a term of incarceration of 3 years, but 2.5 years were suspended. So now you're really only going to be away from your spouse for 6 months.
Right.
Good behavior.
Has been sentenced to a term of incarceration for 3 years. Is that not?
That's what I'm asking. I don't know.
Yeah, I think when you have been sentenced to a term of incarceration for 3 years,
you get sentenced to it and then you get it suspended.
But that is, I don't know the answer. When you say net, I understand what you're getting to. I don't know if that is the language that would be used.
Representative Martin.
Yes, thanks, sir. I'm looking at that one, too. You're thinking of a solid 3 years, nothing that's been suspended or nothing under good conduct, one-third is taken off.
Right.
I was thinking that maybe we need a little more wording to show that we meant a solid 3 years without being adjusted.
Well, I think that's what Representative Davis is saying.
Yes.
A net.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of on the same issue there.
That may be something you want to deal with a clarification amendment for possible floor action.
Mm-hmm.
I would say.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. That is the intent.
Because that suspended 3 years is a real good deterrent in case there's a real problem. And maybe the guy would learn how to behave. But if he knows it goes into a solid 3 year after he abused his wife again, then she has the right to divorce.
Okay, is there any further committee action?
Just for clarification, if it was for abuse, they could get divorced anyway. So it really wouldn't be related necessarily to the abuse.
Okay, further committee action? Representative Kelly?
I would move HB 390 with conceptual amendments and
that's the T number T version.
Yes, with conceptual amendments and attached this one.
Okay, is there any objection to the bill moving with individual recommendations? Seeing none, the bill will move. We also, for the committee members, we did receive back a draft CS on Senate Bill 221. Our legal counsel wanted to talk to a few people in the banking industry about the language, so we will have that back up hopefully tomorrow if we can get assurances that the language is what we wanted it to say. With that, I have a committee report, and that will be the end of the meeting today. And what's being handed out here is that CS on 221. Mm-hmm. With that, we will conclude the meeting for today.